Second question. One common assumption is that much of the global south, once faced with the extreme consequences of climate change and possible Malthusian collapse, will head into North America and Europe as a kind of human tsunami. How likely do you think that scenario is? And should it occur, do you suspect the West, as we currently understand it, will dissolve in a rush of cultural change or suddenly develop a will to survive apart and erect barriers and militaries to keep out the teeming hordes by any means necessary? Well, first, you know, I used to, when I would do my endgame talks, there was a joke I used to tell, which was that I would say, I am all in favor of closing the border with Mexico on one condition, which is then everybody would gasp, which is an interesting thing in itself, which we'll get to in a second. Anyway, everybody would gasp because how dare he want to close a border? And I would say the condition under which I want to close the border to Mexico is if you also close it to the movement of resources. Because if you want to close the movement of people, but not resources, what you're saying is that I don't want you, but I want the coffee that's grown on land that used to be yours. Because the people moving from Mexico or El Salvador aren't coming because they want to take eco-tours of the San Joaquin Valley. They're not coming for the heck of it. They're coming because their land has been stolen and their way of life, their local way of life has been destroyed. And so the problem with a lot of this lies firmly in colonialism and destroying local landways and destroying local land bases, causing people to want to move. And the asterisk I was putting in earlier is, I read this thing by an American Indian the other day saying, don't you dare, when you talk about whether borders should be open or closed, don't you dare reference American Indians as a reason to have open borders. Because we sure as hell didn't. I know that many nations had kill on sight relationships with some of their neighbors, that the Anishinaabe and the Dakota were considered honored enemies, and you would cross the border at your peril. And I know that when the Shawnee Tecumseh was out trying to raise allies among various other Indian groups, some of them would receive him well. I remember one of them received him and listened to him and then said, well, we're not going to join you, but we will give you this. We will let you walk to our border without killing you. And then I think about bears, whom I see every day. There is such a thing as having a home territory. And there is such a thing as having, I mean, anybody who's ever seen hummingbirds knows that hummingbirds will defend their territory. We have, and anybody who knows dogs know that they have some home territory. And one of the things that's messing all this up, as I said, is that capitalism and technology have increased the colonialists' ability to destroy land bases across the world at will. And what happens to the people then? Okay, now I'm going to step back and I'm going to say, but here's another part. Why is it the fault of the poor person in the industrialized nation to have their local culture destroyed because of the actions of the capitalist class harming the people over here? So what this does, and I wrote about this, one of my books I'm most proud of is Culture Make-Believe, because I wrote about these processes and how they work and how I predicted in that book, based on the rise of the KKK in the 1870s and the rise again in the 1920s, I really anticipated the whole Tea Party movement and the insanity of the far right. The thing I didn't anticipate in that book that I missed badly was the complete insanity of the left. But leaving that aside, when you are low on the stack in a hierarchy and you are when you have a small piece of the pie in a system and you have to work hard for that small piece of pie and your pie piece threatens to get smaller, then you will fight back to try to maintain its size. And it doesn't really matter whether you're fighting back, whether your pie piece is getting smaller because of ecological collapse, because of an influx of immigrants, or because of the capitalists are stealing more. You're going to be resentful. And unfortunately, because we have all been inculcated, which comes from the root to stamp in with the heel, been inculcated into identifying with the oppressor, you cannot get angry at the system itself. And so what you do is you lash out at preferably those who are even lower than you on the hierarchy. So you can get the poor whites. You know, a great example of this is a very good book called How the Irish Became White. And it's about how the Irish came over 1830s, whenever, and they, 1830s, 1840s, and there was a lot of prejudice by the previous North Americans against the new Irish immigrants. And the Irish had a choice. They could either ally in the North, ally with the freed blacks, for example, and have a working class solidarity to take on the overlords. The problem is that when you have a lot of people in not much space, and so people don't have access to land, which means they don't have access to food, clothing, and shelter, which means they don't have access to self-sufficiency, which means that they have to get a job. And if you have three children who are starving, it can be much easier to look at the freed black person who is willing to do that job for 2 cents an hour less and get mad at him, as opposed to getting mad at the system. And so as a group, the Irish generally tried to make whatever distinctions they could that would enable them to get a job because their children are starving to death. And so I see I used to teach at Pelican Bay State Prison, and a lot of my students would say, prison's not quite so bad. What's really bad is county jail, like especially the LA County Jail. They said one of the reasons is that when you're in a prison, there is an established hierarchy, and we learn to read it, we get along, you do your time. But in the jail, new people are coming and going every day, and it's kind of chaos. And what this means is there is a lot more violence in there because there's no established order. And I'm not saying established orders are always, stable ways of being are not always better, but what I'm saying is that stable ways of being are generally more stable. And, I just recently learned the same thing is true for bears, that there's a female bear who lost her baby this year. The baby was killed by an adult male. And so I started asking some questions about adult males killing baby males to bring the female into heat. And a friend of mine did some research on this, and she found out that generally the way it works is you'll have this big old male who will keep the younger males in line and will keep an established order that will make it so the younger males won't kill the baby males. But then if something happens, if he's shot by a hunter, then there will be chaos for a while. And my point is that this culture, this expansionist culture that has been continuing to expand across the globe, has been creating chaos everywhere it goes among humans and non-humans for the last 6,000 years. But there's even more bad news here, which is on a finite planet, eventually those chickens have to come home to roost. So yes, this culture has been throwing human and non-human cultures around the globe into chaos everywhere, and it could afford to do that because it was insulated. That insulation is breaking down. And I wish, again, that we were sane enough to address these issues in a reasonable fashion. But we're not. We've shown ourselves to be not. And so it will play out in further racism, further misogyny, further destruction of local cultures, whether those local cultures are in the Cotswolds in the UK or in Syria or in Pakistan or in El Salvador. That's what this, or in the Great Barrier Reef or in the bear community who lives in this forest. That's what this culture does. That's what any abuser does. They disrupt every stable social structure. And that's what we're seeing.